I've got final thoughts on Bills versus Dolphins, a big injury update, prospects to watch for Saturday, and game predictions from Sunday, all coming your way today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Saturday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. It's BetOnline, and it's where the game starts. Well, folks, like I said throughout the course of the week, we do have a Saturday podcast, and if you're listening to this, then you know that. And just with the Bills playing on Monday Night Football, we had a lot to get to this week, and I'm not done talking about this game, and we got some boxes to check here in our typical preparation. So we'll start off with my final thoughts on Bills versus Dolphins. We'll talk to Dr. Kyle Trimble regarding the injury situation for Sunday. I have predictions on the game. And of course, my NFL draft prospects to watch on Saturday. Let's get into it, starting with my final thoughts. And actually, I guess before we get to my final thoughts, there's some newsy items that we need to address that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about here on the podcast. First of all, the Bills lost Raheem Blackshear, UDFA running back, preseason darling. He was signed off of the Bills practice squad by the Carolina Panthers. And so now he's on their active roster. And good for him. He's got a chance to be on a 53-man roster and really maybe jumpstart his career. And one thing we have to keep in mind is that with all of the COVID protocols now no longer existing in the NFL, there's no practice squad protections anymore. Over the last couple of years, the Bills could designate four players per week that other teams couldn't sign off for their practice squad. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. Now, the player still has to agree to go be a member of that other team's active roster, but there's no protection that the Bills have in place to avoid guys being plucked. And so it's disappointing to see Blackshear go, but also I guess I'm glad they didn't take Duke Johnson, because I think Duke Johnson is more equipped to help the Bills this year if needed than Raheem Blackshear. And so the silver lining here is that they still have a really good practice squad player at their disposal at running back in Duke Johnson. Bobby Hart suspended for one game. He'll miss Sunday against the Miami Dolphins because he threw a punch after the game at Jeffrey Simmons that wound up hitting an assistant coach for the Tennessee Titans. Sean McDermott didn't have any comments on this and said they'll handle it internally. I don't know what happened during the game, but I don't think it's a good idea to seek somebody out after the game and try to punch them in the face. So Bobby Hart probably deserved this suspension. Cole Beasley, now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, signed to their practice squad, following the likes of John Brown and LeSean McCoy as former Bills skill players that make their way to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So we'll see. Cole Beasley, I think, has the most left in the tank than those other guys, but you know, is he going to have a real chance to contribute and be part of that offense? Maybe so. Kind of a perfect type of receiver for Tom Brady, but you know, Chris Godwin's their slot guy. They have Scotty Miller, who they like there. So it'll be interesting to see what type of role Cole Beasley can command over in Tampa. So those are the newsy items, but I do want to get to some final thoughts here. And obviously, I think what's on everybody's mind here as game day approaches is the injuries that the Bills have, particularly on defense. Micah Hyde, Dane Jackson, and Jordan Phillips, they're all out. Sean McDermott ruled them out for Sunday. And in just a moment, we're going to talk to Dr. Kyle Trimble of Banged Up Bills. And we recorded that before that designation was made, but everything we discussed was in line with the decision that we heard on Friday that Hyde, Jackson, Phillips are out. And oh, by the way, Jordan Poyer has a foot injury. Now, he did practice and was in uniform on Friday. I think there's a really good chance that he winds up starting. But your secondary on Sunday is going to be probably Jordan Poyer and Jaquan Johnson at safety, with your two outside cornerbacks being Christian Benford and Kyer Elam, two rookies, going up against Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Now, to the credit of the players that are going to be in the lineup for the Bills, whether that's Benford, Elam, or Jaquan Johnson, those guys have all held their own. Whenever they've been on the field, they've done well. Now, obviously, this is a big assignment, and they're going to be playing alongside other raw or inexperienced players in the secondary. But when they've been on the field, they've held their own. But what this comes back to in my mind is two things. First of all, what's the most obvious thing, and that's the pass rush. The pass rush has to win in a big way. And so far this year, they have. And I have no reason to believe that the pass rush won't show up against the Miami Dolphins, who have a replacement-level player at right tackle in Greg Little. They have a new player in terms of playing the position of guard, making what is like the 17th or 18th start of his career at left guard in Liam Eichenberg, who's been a tackle to this point, right, previously in college and last year. Connor Williams is still new to playing the center position. Teron Armstead, their left tackle, has a toe injury. There's going to be some opportunities for this Bills defensive line to win some matchups and apply a lot of heat on Tua Tagovailoa. And so I'm sure Dolphins fans are very excited about the opportunity to attack a very inexperienced Bills secondary. But the other side of that coin is this pass rush has to show up. Von Miller, Greg Rousseau, and Oliver Tim Settle. Looks like they're going to be back in the mix. Boogie Basham, A.J. Epinesa. Those guys have to show up and show out and continue affecting the quarterback like they have in the first two games of the season. So, yeah, the Bills are going to be shorthanded on the back end, but outside of Jordan Phillips, they should have their defensive line intact. And they know what's on them this week. They know how important this is. I expect them to show up and apply a lot of heat on Tua. The other part of this game that we can't lose sight of, as we seemingly spend a lot of time thinking about Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle and the big plays that Miami was able to have in the fourth quarter against Baltimore. The Bills have this guy, Josh Allen, number 17, really good player. Really good friggin' player, elite NFL player, maybe the best player in the league. And that's a lot for Miami to deal with. And Josh Allen's playing really good. You think about the first two games this year, the last two games last year in the playoffs, Josh Allen's last four games, he's 100 for 131. That's a completion percentage of 76%. 1,251 passing yards, 16 touchdowns, two interceptions, 28 rushes for 200 yards and a touchdown over the last four games. We're not talking about playing cupcakes, two playoff games, the defending Super Bowl champions and the Titans, who were the one seed in the AFC last year. That's an average. If you take those four games, his last four games, and average it out, that's, again, a completion percentage of 76%, 313 passing yards per game, four touchdowns, a half an interception, seven rushes for 50 yards, and 0.25 touchdowns. If Josh Allen does what he's done over the last four games against Miami, that's going to be tough on the Dolphins. So while the Bills are shorthanded on defense, they're not really shorthanded on offense. Looks like Gabriel Davis is going to go. Miami's got to deal with Buffalo. That Miami defense gave up 473 yards and 38 points to the Ravens. They got a tougher task than the Ravens coming to their place on Sunday, and it's Josh Allen and this Buffalo Bills offense. And I don't want to lose sight of that in our conversations about this football game. Because even if the Bills are shorthanded in the secondary, they got a big-time pass-rushing unit, and they got a big-time quarterback that's playing great. And not just playing great recently, but historically against Miami. Good recipe here for the Bills, outside of, obviously, some concerns with what's going to happen on the back end. Folks, you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that guy. You've all seen them on the internet. Somebody's proposing. They're at the beach. They're on a dock. And that ring falls out of the ring case and into the ocean. Everybody sees it on the internet. Do not be that guy. And folks, you're in luck because the guys at Brightco Jewelry Insurance will make sure you get a replacement for the full value of that ring, no matter if it's lost, stolen, or you just can't figure out what happened to it. Go to bright.co/lockedon. It's the fastest, easiest, and cheapest way to cover yourself with the best jewelry insurance in the business. These guys at Brightco are geniuses. They made buying insurance for your engagement ring, your watch, or whatever so easy you can get covered in minutes on your cell phone. You won't find a better deal on great coverage that's super affordable. Visit bright.co/lockedon. We all hate insurance, right? But the guys at Brightco turn the whole experience around, so it's probably the fastest and easiest thing you can do for yourself this week. No excuses. For $5 a month, you can get totally comprehensive coverage, and it won't take you more than 2 minutes on your cell phone. Check it out. bright.co/lockedon. I'm joined now by Kyle Trimble. He's a doctor of physical therapy. He runs bangedupbills.com. You can follow him on Twitter at bangedupbills. And Kyle, we got a lot to talk about here today on the podcast. This injury list is much, much bigger than we want it to be, and especially with a lot of players being on the defensive side of the football, a lot of defensive backs against a Miami Dolphins team that has some really explosive wide receivers. So we need you today more than ever. And I think the best way for us to do this is not necessarily take it one player at a time or position groups at a time like we typically do. Let's break this into three buckets. Players that you have significant concerns about their availability on Sunday, players that you have a mild level of concern, and then players that you have just a little bit of concern. And obviously people are most concerned about the ones you're most concerned about. So let's start there with the players that you have a significant level of concern about their availability on Sunday.
All right. So this past week's been a roller coaster. We had the great win against Tennessee on Monday night. We had the issues with Dane Jackson. We had all the other injuries that happened in game there. So we've got a lot of information since then that some injuries appeared minor that are now bigger and vice versa. So we're going to kind of just dig through all this stuff here. So for the significant concern, I'm going to kind of work from easy to hard here. So we had Jordan Phillips. He went down with a hamstring strain on the Matt Milano pick six. He was running full speed, big guy, trying to keep up, getting a block, and he went down like he got shot, unfortunately. He has had hamstring injuries back in 2020 when he was with Arizona. He had two seasons with Arizona that are just marred by injuries. So I don't believe that this injury now is related to the other ones that he had in the past, but he seems to be the best version of himself in Buffalo here. So I don't anticipate that he plays due to how they usually treat hamstring injuries in Buffalo, but it's just that's the reality of it. So I have significant concern for him, but I don't see it being a long-term concern. So moving into the Dane Jackson injury next, that was scary. You know, ambulance coming out in the field, you know, neck immobilized or bored, ambulance, the whole nine yards here. So it's not good, but I want people to keep in mind that is standard protocol when there's a suspected cervical injury. So if there's dangerous hit of mechanism or injury mechanism, if there's other things that they can't do on the field or something that just says, hey, this isn't right, like a numbness down the arm or leg or anywhere in the body with regards to that, they want to get imaging to rule that out. So as they're following the Canadian C-spine rules, and they're just a criteria just says, hey, does this person need to go for imaging or not? So that's all it was. And we found out that was positive news and that he got imaging, x-rays, a CT scan, and he's able to walk out of ECMC. We don't know the exact issue that he's dealing with in regards to his neck. I don't foresee him playing against Miami and potentially against Baltimore. Sometimes these type of things take a little bit of time to kind of get back from, but we've been through worse in Buffalo. I mean, anybody that's been a Bills fan for a while, Kevin Everett, that's about as worse as you can get. So knowing that he's able to walk out of ECMC and not have any issues with that is great, but we're just going to need more information about regarding timeline with that. So it's unfortunate you lose your top cornerback, especially when you got Hill and Waddle coming, but that's just the reality of it. And you know, next man up with that. So positive for Jackson. And then Micah Hyde. Joe, you and I talk often. You know, the big thing was it didn't seem that Hyde was a big issue. It looked like a stinger on film. We went up for a tackle on Robert Woods, and he kind of was stunned almost. Walks off the field, blew medical tent, later carted to locker room, and then he went to the hospital afterward for just later testing. So, once again, sometimes precautionary. There was a report that came out yesterday from Mark Gahn of the Buffalo News that had said that Micah Hyde went to out of town for a second opinion. And there was some angst on Twitter. I know not everybody's on Twitter, but there's a lot of concern about that, and rightfully so. He's one of our best players. Yeah, deal with a neck injury. By my count, this is Micah Hyde's fourth neck injury, though I don't view these injuries as cumulative like we do with concussions. Like, there was a big concern with Mitch Moore several years ago when he's going through all those concussions. So while the injuries can stack upon each other, it's not saying, oh, because you have one neck injury, you have more neck injuries, and they're going to continue to get worse and worse. So we don't know why he went for the second opinion. He wasn't at practice, though they did see that he was at in the locker room at the end of practice there. So he could have gone anywhere. I don't know where the best neurologist, if that is what it is, or orthopedic people he wants to go to. You know, there's a big radius where you can get to an hour, 2 hours by plane. So we don't have enough information what's going on, but if the stinger that I suspect he had was leading to some other issues, there's underlying issues, good. We want to get checked out. Sometimes that's the first symptom. Regrettably, we saw that with Eric Wood when he had to end his career. We were seeing that stuff with Aaron Williams when he had to go through his head and neck injuries. So the Bills are doing their due diligence with regards to taking care of this and make sure they're getting the best opinions possible. So a second opinion is not bad. Some people brought that up on Twitter yesterday. TJ Watt, he went for second, third opinions, and he actually had a better outcome than if he had just said, hey, we're going to go to surgery. So keep that in mind. Second opinions are not bad opinions. We just need more information. There's a number of different things it could be. I could go down that rabbit hole, but we could be here for a half hour talking. Some of you might stick around, a lot of you won't, but I want to see more information before I can say a timeline, whether he plays. I want him to play on Sunday, but I don't know that he's going to, because there's been changes with regards to his ability to practice. And I think the Bills are going to be cautious, keeping him out until they get more information. If he does play, great. I mean, the guy's a veteran. He knows what to do. But I'm going to hold off on giving any more information until we get some more, and then I could talk more confidently about it.
So it sounds like from that opening segment of the players that you're most concerned about, we should be thinking about Jordan Phillips, Dane Jackson, and Micah Hyde not being available on Sunday.
I would agree with that.
All right. Well, let's move to a different bucket here. These are the players with more of a mild level of concern. Maybe they'll play, maybe they won't. But what can you tell us about the players here in this next tier of players in terms of your level of concern?
Yeah. So we know this news is getting better, so that's always a positive thing. So we're going to start off with Jordan Poyer. He's with a foot injury. He's the only guy I cannot find on film what happened to him. He played a majority of the snaps. He got pulled, obviously, in the fourth quarter like most of the starters did. Ian Rappaport says day-to-day with a foot injury. Now, he didn't go through, you know, he was limited to walkthrough on Wednesday, did not participate on Thursday, and was seen on the sideline and just, you know, regular just gym clothes, things like that. So I'm hoping that he's going to practice in some fashion on Friday, because we're recording before Friday's practice. He's a guy that doesn't miss a lot of time. They consider day to day, which is usually a pretty good thing, and when using that term. And it's going to take a lot for Jordan Poyer to not play. So considering if the status of Micah Hyde is up in the air, Poyer's going to get out there, at least try to play. Some of you might know that Jordan Poyer played with a partially torn rotator cuff last year. He just gutted it out. So if there's anything that he can play through, he's... but he's one to watch, though. These guys are Mitch Morse. He went down with a right elbow injury. It seemed like more just a hard contusion, just based on how he fell. He wasn't able to brace it, and this happened very early in the first quarter. He was out for a little while. The offense wasn't moving as well. And as soon as he got back out there, they scored, I think, their second touchdown late in the second, or yeah, excuse me, second quarter. So then he was able to snap. And the big concern is the right arm is the snapping side. So you want to make sure he can grip the ball appropriately. He's not getting numbness, tingling. He's not having any issues bending and straightening out the arm so he can do what he needs to do and block. So he's been limited, but I foresee him playing. than our defensive tackles, Ed Oliver, Tim Settle. Oliver had kind of gone downhill in terms of optimism throughout the week. He didn't practice, but he's been practicing limited, still having the ankle taped up. But considering the status of Jordan Phillips, I foresee Oliver playing because I'm sure he probably wasn't too far away from practicing and playing in week two. But given the extra time off, let's, you know, give him that there. So I want to see where he's at, but I hope he plays and then Tim Settle. I was more cautiously optimistic about him just because he came off the calf injury that he aggravated from the preseason. He was doubtful. He wanted to play. I'm sure they said, no, let's not make this thing worse, but he's been able to practice. And then they'll probably once again limit his reps as they do with all the defensive line guys. So yeah, I'm concerned, but I think all those guys can play unless there's some type of setback on Friday.
All right. So there's a lot of players left, and I guess I'm happy about that because the last tier here is, well, there's some level of concern. They're injured, but you're not really doubting their availability on Sunday.
Correct. So we're going to go starting off Gabe. We're going to start off with Gabe Davis. So he's dealing with the right ankle injury. This is now the third documented time I found that he's injured that right ankle, suffered it in the AFC divisional playoffs against the Ravens. He also suffered an injury against the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one last year. So sometimes you roll an ankle and then it kind of is loose and it kind of just, you can keep injuring it. We've seen that with Leonard Fournette. He's a perfect example of that where he injures the ankle, but he bounces back quickly because the injury, the ligaments are lax in there enough to where you can roll the ankle, you can injure it, but then there's not a lot of associated damage with that. That might be what's happened with Gabe Davis. Due to the late week injury, they're likely said, hey, let's get this thing right. He's going to be a week out in a few days after this. He said he's going to play on Sunday. He talked with Matt Parrino of New York Upstate about that. He might not be 100% and be able to do what he needs to do, but I would imagine a 80% Gabe Davis is going to be better than some of the other options we have on the team. But if for some reason he can't go, hey, they're doing okay without him for one or two games. The next one is Matt Milano. He suffered a stinger on a thunderous hit on Malik Willis. He's been fine. They have designated as a neck injury, which is going to be common with the stingers that we see. No concern about him. The other one's Dawson Knox. He's dealing with a right foot injury. He did not get a game day a game designation within the game, but he sidelines getting his foot and ankle taped up, and then I was able to find that he had a out of bounds catch right before. I believe it was a Reggie Gilliam touchdown. So he went out and he kind of just stepped up over his foot and kind of fell over top of it. And there could be a mild foot sprain, but he has a brace on during practice. He's moving around. He might be a little bit limited, but they can cycle out Reggie Gilliam. They can cycle out Quentin Morris. Like, they don't have to get Dawson Knox the full complement of snaps there. So he's able to return play, which is important. So then the last two is Reggie Gilliam. He suffered a left elbow injury on a punt return with, I believe it was 9:23 left in the third quarter. The only reason I noticed that is because he came back with a black elbow brace on. And when he was coming off the punt return unit, he was kind of guarding his elbow. Like, he had it bent, like, hey, I'm not going to be able to move this that well because I'm sure it was some pain. So he's going to get out there and play. I don't see how he doesn't. And he popped up on the injury report on Thursday, you know, because when they're actually trying to move around and do things. And then the final one, Cam Lewis. I only highlight this one is because he didn't play on Sunday, but he does have a chronic bone infection in his forearm from a bad break in college. He broke his, I think it was radius and ulna, though I'd have to go back and check that. But he developed a bone infection. He highlighted that during training camp, wears a brace on there. So he might have been dealing with some pain that was limiting him. But in case somebody in the secondary can't go, Cam Lewis can step up, and I'm not concerned about him.
Well, the Bills have built a deep and talented roster, and that is going to be stressed on Sunday against the Dolphins. Maybe there's only a few of these players that actually can't go, but there's sounds like there's going to be some limitations pretty much from a lot of these players that, you know, if they do play on Sunday, that will have to be accounted for. So big task ahead of the Buffalo Bills and obviously Sean McDermott and his coaching staff, the medical staff, and obviously a big effort from you this week, Dr. Kyle Trimble. Hopefully we have a lot less to talk about next time we link up for a conversation. But as always, I do appreciate your expertise.
Thank you, Joe.
BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports information this season. You can find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including everything you need for week 3 of the NFL season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. It's the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. It's BetOnline, and it's where the game starts. All right, folks, let's close this thing out by giving you my predictions for Sunday and my prospects to watch on Saturday with an eye towards the Buffalo Bills. Let's start with the predictions because I know not everybody loves the prospects. Not everybody's going to watch college football. So let's get you what you want first. And if you want to hear about prospects, stick around and we'll talk about that as well. So my 5 predictions for Sunday's game against the Miami Dolphins. Number 1, Tua is no longer the NFL's leading passer after this game. Right now, he is. He leads the NFL. He has 89 more passing yards than number 2, who is, of all people, Carson Wentz. He has 123 more passing yards than, of all people, Joe Flacco, who's number 3. He's at 125 more than Josh Allen, who's at 4, and 126 more than Justin Herbert, who's at number 5. Tua leaves Sunday no longer leading the NFL in passing yards. Number 2, Greg Rousseau's sack streak continues. He's gotten a sack in each of the first 2 games of the season. I predict he gets another one on Sunday, whether that's beating Greg Little, beating Liam Eikenberg. He's going to have some opportunities to get in there. His length, his ability to influence a wide area given that length, I think he's going to get Tua down and record another sack. Number 3, I am predicting under 75 rushing yards for Miami. And we talked about this. This run game for Miami is something that they want to get going. They've invested a lot there in terms of blocking. They're paying a fullback. They paid 2 running backs in Edmonds and, you know, giving a modest deal to Raheem Mostert. Mike McDaniel wants to run the football. And maybe it gets on track at some point this year, but I don't think it happens against the Bills. The Bills have been dominant stopping the run so far this year against 2 teams that also want to run the football, and the Rams and the Titans. And I think this is a game where the Bills understand that they got to put a lot of stress on Miami to keep pace with them. I think the Bills are going to throw the ball a lot. I think they want to embrace that type of a game script and invite Miami to a track meet. And I think the Bills' front 7 will be up to the task of shutting down the run. And Miami is going to be kind of put in a position where they have to throw the football. Less than 75 yards for the Dolphins on Sunday. Number 4, I do not predict that both teams get into the 30s when it comes to points scored. So far this season, the Bills are averaging 36 points per game. Miami is averaging 31. I don't think one of these teams gets into the 30s. And you kind of look at both sides of the coin, and I'm predicting that Miami doesn't get into the 30s, but I'll give myself some wiggle room and say that both do not. And that's a hot take because you're talking about a Dolphins high-octane passing offense suddenly going up against a depleted Bills secondary and, of course, Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. I don't think both teams get to the 30s. And lastly, do I predict that the Bills win and get to 3-0? Or do I predict that they lose and the Dolphins get to 3-0? I think the Bills win this game. I have concern. Yeah, I do. I certainly do. But every time I get a little bit nervous about it, I go back to Josh Allen. The player that he is, the player that he's been, how good he's playing lately, how good he plays against Miami, that he's got a full complement around him for this game, going up against a Dolphins defense that has absolutely struggled. And knowing that you're shorthanded on defense and maybe a little bit more is going to be on your plate to score, I think Josh Allen rises to the occasion and wins this football game for the Buffalo Bills. All right, so my prospects to watch for the Bills on Saturday. Again, I do this every week and try to give you a player in every time slot in a marquee game that I think has a chance to be a Bills target in the draft. So that way you can kind of get ahead of the curve and get to know some of these prospects early on. So at 12 p.m. Eastern time, crank up your TV, watch Clemson against Wake Forest, two ranked teams here. Clemson, top five team, if I'm not mistaken, top six, something like that. And then Wake Forest, really high octane offense. But what I want you to focus in on here is the Clemson defensive line. They got a ton of prospects. In particular, defensive end KJ Henry, 6'4", 260 pounds. He's a senior. He's coming on this year. Had some good production early on. A balanced player against the run and pass. Good technique. Kind of fits into the Bills' mold. You know, if Shaq Lawson can't be back, they'll be looking for another defensive end, especially after this season when A.J. Epenesa is going into a contract year. So I think the Bills will invest in a defensive end, a young defensive end next year. KJ Henry could fit the bill. Also, Rook Oronhoro. Difficult name to say there, but he's number 33, plays defensive tackle, 6'4", 300 pounds, super athletic, new to football. I can't remember where his family is from, but, you know, kind of football's not where he's from. So he moved to the United States and became a football player, and he's really, really athletic, and he's really stout against the run, but he's really new to the football game, the game of football. And so making plays, not quite there yet, but the physical skill is. And so I think this could be a bet on traits guy that the Bills would gravitate towards. Now, Clemson has a couple other defensive linemen. I don't think they're going to be available for the Bills. They're kind of high first round picks. And defensive end Miles Murphy and defensive tackle Brian Brzee. But check them out, because if they do fall down later into the first round, they could be options for Buffalo. But I think between Jordan Phillips on a 1-year deal, like I said, Shaq Lawson on a 1-year deal, AJ Epenesa entering a contract year next year, the Bills are going to keep investing in this defensive line. At 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, CBS is the channel you want to go to. Florida against Tennessee. Check out Tennessee wide receiver Cedric Tillman, number 4, 6'3", 215 pounds. A wide receiver is a spot I think the Bills could invest in somewhere, maybe on second, third, fourth round, something like that. You think about Jake Kumerow, 1-year deal. Gabriel Davis will be entering a contract year next year. Jameson Crowder, 1-year deal. Isaiah McKenzie will be in a contract year next year. So I think they're going to keep investing in wide receivers, and Cedric Tillman makes a lot of sense to me. What's interesting about Cedric is he plays the exact same role in this offense. Josh Heupel, the head coach at Tennessee, he was over at UCF when Gabriel Davis was there, and it's the exact same role that Gabriel Davis played. And so Cedric Tillman is literally just Gabriel Davis in this Tennessee offense. Same type of role, double moves, vertical routes, size, ball skills down the field. And so I think you get a lot of what Gabe Davis offers in Cedric Tillman. 6'3", 215, good speed down the field, good ball skills. And I think he could be a Jake Kumerow replacement. He's averaging 16 yards per catch so far this year. He's a big play threat. And I think he kind of just kind of fits into that mold that I think the Bills will maybe want to add to this receiver core, especially with Kumerow aging and, you know, maybe wanting to get a little bit younger and cheaper. At 7:30, this is going to be a good game, Wisconsin against Ohio State. I want you to check out Wisconsin center, number 75, Joe Tippmann. And he plays center for them. No doubt in my mind, he could play guard in the NFL. 6'6", 317. You know, Brandon Bean's going to love that size. And he gives you size, he gives you length, he gives you power, he gives you movement skills. He's a total package. I think he's a day two pick and a guy that I think has plug-and-play potential as a starter. And he's a taller offensive lineman, which we've seen Brandon Bean gravitate towards. But when you talk about 6'6 interior offensive lineman, the concern always comes, what type of leverage can they generate? Well, that's exactly what Aaron Cromer believes in terms of not necessarily leverage from being able to lower your hips, but leverage in terms of using the ground from leverage and being willing to sit on your hips and have leverage with your hands and generate force and momentum from the ground to be able to use that to apply force and move bodies out of the way. I think he's perfect for Cromer. So Joe Tippmann, Wisconsin center, number 75, check him out. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here today on the podcast and this week. The hay's in the barn. No more conversations until after the Bills and Dolphins square off on Sunday. We'll obviously record a podcast after the game and get that to you as quickly as possible. Hopefully it's our first victory Monday of the year. We've had a victory Friday and a victory Tuesday. Got to get to our first victory Monday. So hopefully that's in the cards. Obviously I predicted it will happen. So go Bills. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to catching up with you again on Monday.